We are living in the largest crisis, opportunity, crisis, opportunity, crisis, opportunity we have ever lived within. It's an emergency. It's an emergency. We're living in an emergency time. And lots of feelings are coming up. And lots of hopelessness and powerlessness is coming up. And we could shout out all the stuff that's happening, from economic collapse to ecological collapse to topsoil to corruption to whatever, healthcare crisis, right? It's just like it's pouring in on us. And yet we continue to be asked to change our light bulbs, drive less, and write letters to our congressperson. And not much more. Oh, and send $25 a year to a national organization that never asks you to be involved. And on top of that, for years and years, I've been hearing my friends say, when things get really bad, people will get active. Years and years. You've heard that? In the last year, I've been hearing my friends say, it's too late. So we've gone from, when it gets bad, we'll get really involved and we'll turn things around, to it's too late. What a cop-out. What happened? Who are we? Who are we? And I think it just makes us crazy. It makes us feel absolutely crazy. And if you look at the independent media, I don't call it alternative media because it's the real media. It's the media that is responsive to We the People, funded by the We the People, telling us what we need to know as citizens. How can that be alternative media? To me, that's the mainstream media. When we listen to that media, the non-corporate controlled owned media, what we hear, just to give you one example, let's take climate disruption, which is obviously a crisis. According to increasing scientific consensus internationally, we need to cut 80 to 90% of our carbon emissions within the next 20 years. How many people already know that? Less than half, way less than half. Not surprising you don't all know that, because even people who are trying to pay real close attention are not getting their information from unfiltered sources that are giving we the people, we citizens, the sovereign people, what we need to govern ourselves effectively and accurately. This is an example of what we the people are being fed, the pap we're being fed by our supposed environmental leaders. This is a book cover of a current book from E! Magazine, which calls itself The Environmental Magazine. That's quite a claim. This is a new book, Earth Talk, Expert Answers to Everyday Questions About the Environment. And these are the questions that we the people are probably asking ourselves right now. Now, if we are powerful, sovereign, democratic people in a democratic republic, we are we the people, what would we, what could we, what should we be asking ourselves at this moment in this emergency crisis opportunity? Who's in charge? Why are the questions that the leading environmental book, magazine, I'm sorry, in the country is asking us, is thinking that we're asking, these are all questions that who would ask? A consumer. And that's exactly where the current power holders, corporate rulers, government leaders, that's where they want us. That's exactly where they want us. They want us to be active consumers who boycott or vote with our dollars or buy the stuff we really think we support, like fair trade. And I have to say that this is actually, I'm sure many people in this room do this actively with the dollars, with their hard-earned dollars. But this is one of the least effective ways that we the people, the sovereign people, can act in a democratic society. I'm going to ask you to practice throughout my talk tonight, speaking as if, thinking as if you are, we the people. And I'm going to ask you occasionally, I'm going to say something to stimulate the following response. We are we the people.
We are we the people.
We are we the people.
We are we
the people. We are we the people. Now, when we think about our relationship to the corporate form And I'm going to give you a very, very, very quick history lesson. The American Revolution, to a large degree, was an anti-corporate rule revolution. How many people knew that? We were throwing off the Crown's corporations. We were throwing off the corporations which were the 13 colonies. The Virginia colony was run by the Virginia Company. The Massachusetts Bay Colony was run by the Massachusetts Bay Company. These were Crown corporations. We have been an anti-corporate rule people since the beginning. And the American Revolution, to a large degree, was a revolution to throw off corporate rule. And we seized sovereignty from the king in the revolution. The king had claimed sovereignty handed to him directly by God. Amazing. And we seized it in the revolution. And there's plenty of limitations to the revolution. But I'm going to talk about the powerful stuff tonight. And we invested in it not in the federal government. We invested sovereignty in us. Because... thank you. We are. That's who we are. And we invested it in ourselves. Now, interestingly enough, I bet almost nobody knows this. I barely know this. But if you read the 10 Bill of Rights, the 10 amendments to the Constitution, which are called the Bill of Rights, the amendment number 10, Powers of the States and People, says, the powers not delegated to the U.S. by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. In other words, whatever we don't delegate in authority to the state or the federal government, we reserve as the sovereign people. We are the sovereign. To this day, we govern ourselves. Well, jumping forward from the American Revolution in the late 1800s, we began to have really large corporations. And up until then, it was standard across the states of the United States that corporations were chartered uniquely one at a time in the state where they were founded. And some of the basic laws in those states were, and it's hard to imagine this today, but as I say them, think about how much we need these laws back today and try to believe that it's actually not that difficult to get them back. We could get them back through state ballot initiative. Corporations were prohibited from owning other corporations or merging with other corporations. Corporations were prohibited from owning property beyond that which they were given to use to fulfill their charter. Corporations had a life of 10 to 30 years, and at the end of that period, they were dissolved. They ceased to be, their assets were taken and given, distributed to the shareholders. Corporations had no secrecy or privacy rights whatsoever. All their vaults, all their financial data was public. Corporations were prohibited from giving any money to candidates, from lobbying, from participating in the writing of legislation, from educating us through their supposed political advertising. These were all felonies. What I'm describing to you were felonies. Corporations were prohibited from donating money to charitable organizations, to civic organizations, because we don't want we the people becoming dependent on the largesse, the benefits, the generosity of corporate money. And corporate lawyers worked very, very hard to get rid of all of these things. And this was the standard reality from the late 1700s to the late 1800s in the United States. And in the late 1800s, things started to change very, very quickly, mainly because the state legislatures of New Jersey and Delaware, which were becoming more and more corrupt and filled with people who were allies of corporate leaders, started saying, recharter in our states, and you don't have to abide by all these rules. And so one after another, there was what I call a counter-revolution, where we lost all of this revolutionary understanding of what the proper role is between we the people and corporations. And it's gotten so bad, and I should say that the largest social movement in American history rose up to try to stop this seizure of our authority. 1886, corporations became persons under law. They used the 14th Amendment to the Constitution in 1886 to say, when they were talking about African Americans becoming freed and becoming full citizens, they actually really meant corporations too. And I know this sounds absolutely absurd, but that's what they used as an argument. And they'd been working on it for 40 years. And at that point, the Supreme Court in 1886 was mostly railroad attorneys. And this was a railroad case, Southern Pacific Railroad versus Southern versus Santa Clara County, 1886. The 14th Amendment is the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution. Since 1886, hundreds and hundreds of times corporations have used this clause, and in only a handful of cases have African Americans benefited from it. Now, since then, we had the largest social movement rose up in response to this catastrophe, and these days it's called the Populists, and we know almost nothing about this movement because the history of the Populists was written by the movement that followed, which is the Progressives, and it's not what you think. It was the Populist movement was the last great mass social movement in the United States, absolutely committed to we the people being sovereign and corporations having no participation at all in the body politic. And progressives wrote the history of the populist movement until the 1960s. Progressives believed that corporate leaders, enlightened corporate leaders, were natural leaders for a real democracy, and that we needed, and that it was inevitable, that corporations would play a massive role in our democratic structures. And so here are some of the realities that have come about since then, because corporations have won one Bill of Rights protection after another through personhood. So for example, corporations have more free speech rights than we do. They're superpersons. When you as a worker enter your workplace, how many people know that you park your Bill of Rights protections at the gate? That at that point forward, the corporation holds all speech rights. That frequently, the people who work there, the people who work there, don't even have bulletin board rights, unless you have sometimes an enlightened owner. This is a standard feature of corporate rule. We now have a situation where we've gone from corporate charters being written by state legislatures uniquely, one at a time, filled with prohibitions and requirements, to a reality where corporate charters are now written by corporate lawyers with no prohibitions or requirements at all. And this is just a very brief history lesson into the mess that we're in. And so it comes to pass that commercial speech is completely now protected, but when we try to speak in public space, there are legal problems. Now, it's been a century or more since we actually remembered that in mass. It's been a century or more since we've been able to recall en masse what exactly that means. We don't even think about today what it is that we actually really want. For example, how often do we think about, or let me do this a different way, if we were to change the laws today, if we the people were to say, we're going to suspend our disbelief and we're going to start paying attention to what it is, not that we want to fight against, but we, the people, really want, need, deserve, as the sovereign people, what is it that we would be working for? Not to stop harm, but to what? Be really, really specific. If we saw ourselves as self-governing people, what would we be organizing for? Universal public health care. Specifics. Public land ownership, public common space, a return of the commons, free food. Now, part of what stops us from thinking seriously about these things is that we actually don't, we may claim that we see ourselves as larger than just consumers or just activists or just private residents of a place, but I think the reality is that most of us really are stuck before we even get there, because we don't really understand the mechanisms of power anymore, and because corporations have so many rights at this point that we don't know how to get past them. Well, there's some very, very exciting stuff going on around the country, and I touched on it last year very briefly, and it's really gotten much, much more exciting. So let's go back to what I mentioned about carbon emissions. If we have to cut carbon emissions 80 to 90% in the next 20 years, which is increasingly a universal scientific consensus on the planet, And if you want to look at specifics, and it's in the bookstore, there's this wonderful book called Heat, How to Stop the Planet from Burning, by Georges Monbiot, who's a British investigative journalist and author. And he takes the specifics. Are we going to have to go live in caves again to actually get back to a world that is sustainable for us? Are we going to have vehicles at all? What is it going to look like? And he takes each segment of the culture, of society, and he does a reality check of the science. And what he discovers, for example, is that to cut 80 to 90% in 20 years, we will be having to completely end long-distance commercial flight. He doesn't see any other way around it. And this is the most detailed investigation that you'll find in a layperson-accessible document. He's found that we're going to have to almost entirely cut the long-distance shipment of goods. Almost entirely. And even if you think, oh, we'll just use great sailing ships from China, doesn't factor. We're going to have to almost entirely end the private use of vehicles. So these are really exciting things, right? For people in this room, anyway. Might be very scary to the general public, but I'm not so sure. Because when you ask the public what they actually want, and the only person that I almost ever hear quoting these statistics where I learn over and over again to my shock and amazement that we are actually, the people in this room are actually the majority on virtually everything that matters. For example, 60% of Americans want universal single-payer public health insurance like the rest of the first world has. Now, how many people believe that that's already a majority opinion? How many people already knew that was already a majority opinion? Good for you. How many people already knew that we, the people already in majority, want much, much, much more stringent rules protecting our public forests and our privately owned forests, and that we want an end to clear cutting? The majority want that. How many people knew that the majority, for decades, have been wanting much more stringent ecological protections across the board of what is needed for a sustainable world and are willing to pay substantially larger taxes for this? How many people knew that? That's a majority opinion. So I am increasingly convinced that although we may attempt to see ourselves as citizens, that we actually, most of us, and I'm guessing that even a majority of the people in this room would have a hard time believing that the stuff that you really want, the stuff that you know we need to turn this world around, to end this crisis, opportunity, is already the opinion of, that's what we already want. So what are we going to do? How do we get whatever it is out of the way? And you take healthcare. And, healthcare is front page day after day right now. Our president, the Democrats, almost entirely, are opposing universal, single-payer, publicly funded healthcare. The only mass opposition to it is corporations, pharmaceutical companies, health insurance companies. That's the only opposition. There is no legitimacy for corporations to have governing authority in this country. There's no legitimacy at all. This 1886 and beyond history is smoke and mirrors. They got a Supreme Court to decide that corporations have rights, one amendment at a time throughout the Bill of Rights, free speech rights, contract protections, property rights, etc. These are all Supreme Court decisions. They've never been validated by legislatures. They've never been voted on by the public. And yet, we know what we need. We know what we want. And yet, where is all of our activism still? 99.999% of our activism, probably in this room, certainly across the country, is challenging one corporate harm at a time or one corporation at a time, rather than saying, corporations don't have legitimate rights, legitimate authorities to interfere in what we the people want. There is no legitimacy there. And so it has become clear to me after doing work for about a dozen or more years on this that the main problem is here. It's in our thought forms. It's in our words. It's how we think about the relationship between citizens and corporations. Who are we? We're we the people. It sounds silly, doesn't it? But what does that actually mean? Does anyone know what that means? To fill that responsibility? What would it look like if we started passing laws at the local level, at the county level, ultimately at the state and beyond, that withdrew corporate rights? That said, in our city, in the city of Portland, in the county of Multnomah, corporations no longer have the rights of persons under law. And therefore, they're not going to be in our way, and we're going to pass the following laws. And corporations, by the way, because we have withdrawn their rights in the law, they can't challenge the law. They don't have the legal right even to challenge our law. They don't have any right to lobby our elected officials. They don't have any right to have commercial speech. Political speech in our media. And I want to share with you something very, very exciting that's happening, that's starting to happen around the country. And I want to go to what's queued on Democracy Now. Hopefully it's still there. This is a 4-minute excerpt from a recent Democracy Now! Of what's happening in, of all places, Spokane, Washington. This is Tom Lindsay from the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund in Pennsylvania, as a public interest attorney who over the last 5 or 10 years has been working to help communities, not progressive or radical communities, in fact, mostly very conservative rural communities in Pennsylvania, to realize that they have the authority to govern themselves and to get corporations out of the way. And more than 200 townships in Pennsylvania have passed ordinances which prohibit corporate factory farms in their townships.
Right.
It's actually, Spokane operates under a city home rule charter. Some cities in the United States operate under those, basically a local constitution for the city. And citizens can come together to actually petition to change that home rule charter. And the idea about driving in a Bill of Rights was to say to folks in Spokane and these groups that came forward to work on this project, to say, what aren't we getting over the past couple decades of our work? Because it seemed to some people that our conventional traditional activism was failing. In other words, writing letters to congressmen and doing what we perceive as traditional activism in terms of protesting and soliciting comments at regulatory hearings and those types of things, that folks have increasingly felt the need to seize their local government entities to actually begin to build their values into those frameworks of law, rather than simply waiting for other people to come and save us to do that work themselves. And so these folks have stepped forward to actually drive their values into the city home rule charter here.
You're a part of this whole corporate charter movement. Explain what that is.
Well, it's an understanding that our activism is limited in the United States. We're in essence placed into a box, which is limited by something called corporate rights. Corporations today have the same constitutional rights as you or I, but because of their wealth, of course, they can exercise those rights to a greater extent. So even though you and I have First Amendment rights and Fourth Amendment rights and Bill of Rights protections under the U.S. system of law, corporations have those rights too. So Walmart Corporation, for example, has First Amendment rights and Fourth Amendment rights under the law. And what the folks in Spokane have started to say, as well as 100-some communities on the East Coast, which have begun passing these ordinances and laws as well, is that to say to themselves, we can't build a sustainable, environmentally, economically sustainable system if our activism is defined for us within that box. And so we need to break out of that box somehow. And one of the most amazing things about this, for these particular Community Bill of Rights, which is being amended into the Spokane City Home Rule Charter, is that it actually deals with that, declaring in that Bill of Rights that corporations don't have rights that can actually exceed those rights of people within the city of Spokane. And so it's pretty groundbreaking stuff in addition.
Can you talk about Shapley, Maine, and how the Poland Springs decision would impact what you're talking mm-hmm. about here and what that is?
It's fascinating stuff happening in New England right now. You have Nestle Corporation, who owns Poland Springs, coming into several small communities, not just Shapley, but also Newfield and Wells, Barnstead, New Hampshire, Atkinson, New Hampshire, a bunch of different places. And instead of these activists saying to themselves, we're going to do the same thing that we've done for the past 40 years, which is go and beg and plead in front of a regulatory agency to try to limit the number of thousands of gallons that can come out of our aquifer in these communities, that these folks have moved forward and at town meetings have actually passed law that bans corporations from withdrawing water from within their aquifer, and then have also taken steps within those town meetings to strip corporations of those constitutional rights, which would normally be used to overturn those laws that are being passed in those areas. And so what's happening is almost like a grassroots revolt where people have said, we're not going to wait for the regulatory agencies to come in and save us. We're not going to wait for the Sierra Club to come in to save us. These rural, relatively conservative towns are rising up to seize their own lawmaking authority to say we are not going to allow the corporatization of water in these areas.
Thomas Lindsay, you've also been consulting with the government of Ecuador in rewriting its constitution. How does this relate?
Well, it's this concept that we've never really had an environmental movement in the United States, because our environmental movement has always been based on nature as property. In other words, if you own 10 acres of ground in the United States, carries with it the legal ability to destroy the ecosystems on that 10-acre piece of property. What is increasingly growing is a realization that for a real environmental movement to occur, that ecosystems must have legally enforceable rights of their own. And so folks in Ecuador who are rewriting their constitution, their national constitution, heard about what was happening in the United States, because we have 13 municipalities in the United States now that have passed local laws that say that nature and ecosystems are no longer property, but actually have legally enforceable rights of their own. And Ecuador became the first country in the world to take that concept of moving to a rights-based environmental protection system and ensconce it into their national constitution. It's now law.
We have 10 seconds, but what would it take to get the Community Bill of Rights here in Spokane into the city charter?
Well, first it takes 2,800 signatures, and we're doing the signature gathering now to put it on the ballot. And then it's going to take about 25,000 votes within the city of Spokane. And what's amazing is you have environmental groups sitting down with labor union locals, sitting down with community organizations, folks that normally wouldn't sit down across from each other, who have actually unanimously endorsed these Community Bill of Rights.
Paul Hawken gave a commencement address at Portland State University a month ago. Maybe a few of you caught it. It was extraordinary. I just saw it online. You can Google it. It's very easy to find. Here's just one brief passage, one of the most beautiful commencement addresses I've ever read. He said, "Forget that this task of planet saving is not possible in the time required. Don't be put off by people who know what is not possible. Do what needs to be done, and check to see if it was impossible only after you are done." The problem is that we are too obedient. We've been challenging corporate harms through the regulatory arena, as the power holders have been urging us to. The regulatory arena being the one that corporate leaders created, invented from out of scratch in the 1890s, so that we would challenge their harms in a completely ineffective way. And we've been begging the leaders, corporate and otherwise, for far too long to do the right thing. We govern ourselves. We are in an extraordinary emergency crisis opportunity. And what would it look like for us not to think that we actually need to overthrow anyone, but that the sovereign people have always had and still have under constitutional law all of the powers we need, all of the rights we need to take care of all of the changes we need? And if we imagine a 90% cut in carbon emissions in the next 20 years, what would it take not as consumers, not as activists, but as the majority, thinking as the majority, what would it take for us to imagine reaching that goal 1 year at a time, planning for it? What would it take to make a 10 or 15 or 20% change the first year? What laws would need to be changed? What ordinances would we need to pass? What groups of environmentalists and church and labor and Indian and whatever other groups are interested in working together, not as single issue groups and coalitions, but as what would it take to change the laws year after year? 30 states have the ballot initiative. Portland obviously has the ballot initiative. What would it take for us to do that work together, thinking more boldly than we ever have? And what an amazing recipe for the lifting of our crazy making, our despair, our grief, our hopelessness, our sense of complete powerlessness. And we start going from, we move from what we can do, what can I do? What can I, in isolation, do, to imagining, realizing that the people on your block and the people in your workplace and the people in your neighborhood and the people in your city already agree with you on the fundamental issues that we need to do to turn this world around in very, very short order. What would it take? What an amazing lifting of the weight if we actually knew what it looked like to act as citizens. Thank you.